This interview is being conducted for the Kentucky Oral History Commission on Kentucky Burley Tobacco by John Clee, and I'm talking to Francis Comer. We've kind of been talking a while, but why don't you start back and just tell me a little bit about your background, about your education and some of your early years.
I was educated at University of Dayton Prep School.
Now, you're a native. You're a native.
I'm a native of Mason County, but our high school was at University of Dayton. Prep school from 1919 to 1923, and then I attended Villanova College for 2 years, and transferred to Columbia University, which I worked for about 6 months, and obtained a job in the financial section down at Wall Street. And I worked, and that was 1926 and 7, and I worked there until 1931, and I was driven home by the Depression.
Yeah.
And then in 1932, I applied and got a job with the American Tobacco Company. I worked myself up to sort of a foreman.
Now, that was here in Maysville?
That was in Maysville.
And what were they doing then?
The American Tobacco Company had a redryer plant on Union Street in Maysville.
Mm-hmm.
And they, their peak year, they processed 12 million pounds of tobacco. That was in 32 and 3 when they had a large crop.
Now, they would, they were just redrying it and then shipping it off to...
redrying it and putting it in barrels, and they stored it up along the railroad, and so it was available to be shipped out on cars. But unfortunately, the 37 flood... there was about 2 to 3 million pounds of American tobacco that was lost in the flood. It got wet and it was not usable. And they were disenchanted. It was Maysville. That was the second flood they were in. So they curtailed their operation. They went into what's called green packing, which they can buy much more tobacco and separate. And they went to high ground.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question just about those 3 years of the American Tobacco Company. Now, what kind of tobacco were they looking for then?
The American tobacco is they've never changed their type of tobacco they like. Mm-hmm. They like a thin, a mountainous type tobacco, and they don't care much for the heavy body tobacco that's more native of this area.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of eastern Kentucky mountains that comes to Maysville, and they are generally fulfill the needs from there.
Now they would look for that kind of tobacco on the floor,
and they still do. They haven't changed their taste over the number of years that I've known them.
Now Mason County doesn't grow a kind of tobacco, but
yeah,
going farther
east, it does.
Yeah.
And occasionally we have some thin tobacco, but it's unusual. I've noticed though when tobacco gets real scarce that they take the heavy kind. It's better than what they have, but they take it.
Yeah.
And then.
They got pushed out in 30, or they left in 37.
And then
what happened to you then?
One of their storage houses, the one on Wood Street along the railroad, they converted into a tobacco warehouse. And I was asked to participate in running it along with C.M. Jones, a gentleman from Mullins, South Carolina, who had helped start the warehouse business in Maysville in 1980. And Gordon Lambert and myself. And the first day of sales, the market opened low.
Now this was in
1937 and 38. This was the year of the flood, but the flood was in January and this was December of that year.
Yeah.
And I was in the office and I heard all this commotion outside and I went out and here was these farmers with tobacco sticks and whooping and a holler. And I met my partner. And I said, what's going on? And he said, the farmers have stopped the sales. And every once in a while, a buyer would tear by me, kind of headed for the front door. Some of them were running pretty fast. Others were in a fast jog. And I asked, what about Mr. Jones? And he said, you and I better go hide. Mr. Jones is shaking hands with him. And things quieted down in about a half an hour. So we presented the tobacco for sale the next day. And wouldn't you believe it? It was about 5 cents a pound higher the next day.
Yeah, now that.
And I'm not in favor of violence, but that maybe it did help.
Worked that time.
It worked that time. It did definitely.
So the farmers had actually chased the buyers
out.
Yeah,
they chased them out of the warehouse.
Wonder if that had happened. Wonder if that happened very frequently. Or?
It had happened once before, back in the 20s. I heard the other warehousemen
talking about it.
Yes, it had a low market after World War One.
Uh-huh.
The market tobacco got real low, and they stopped sales. And it was a threat of violence. Then, in 1937 and 1938, our warehouse averaged 1848, 1939, 1789. 1940, 1377.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was a low year. It was a bad crop. And in 1939, Congress had passed what is known as the Tobacco Inspection Act.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, they had these government graders, they would inspect it. They had no authority, but they would put these, they would classify it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would compare grades, and if a farmer, another farmer had the same grade as you had and you didn't get as much money, maybe your pile of tobacco should be rejected. Maybe it overlooked your pile. That was,
so it helped a little bit.
It was a comparison, is what it was. Well, and then this, when after the market was slow, during Christmas, we got Fred Benson and some congressmen, Mr. Bates and Mr. Albert Barkley.
Uh-huh.
We established price support, and we established it on these government grades. That each government grade called for so much price support.
Mm-hmm.
And before Christmas, the Love's tobacco, which is the prime stock tobacco, had been selling for 15 cents, and the government price was 23. And the Bright Leaf, it was selling for 12 and 13 cents, it was 21. And everybody thought that the government was just foolish paying all that tobacco. And of course, they got about 80% of it.
Sure.
But unfortunately, the market was sold out. The crop had been 80% sold before Christmas.
See.
So not too many farmers participated
benefited
in it. Yeah, benefited by it. So everybody thought the government got, I got figures here, the government got over 40 million pounds out of that crop.
Uh-huh.
And everybody thought the government would never sell it.
Mm-hmm.
But along in August, the companies looked at it and inspected.
Mm-hmm.
And by November, they bought it all.
I see.
Adolf Hitler was marching.
Yeah.
And in 1941, the market jumped from 1377 to 2885, because that was the beginning of the war. December the 7th, we were in war.
And it was more demand.
The following year, it had climbed up into the 40s.
Gee.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about those early warehouse years. I need really to talk a little bit to you about what is the role of the warehouseman, what does a warehouseman do, but those early years, how does it differ from what they do now?
Our process is primarily the same. We're commission merchants. We take it off the farmer's truck and put it on baskets. And then it's sold. We sort it according to the grades, basically five grades. And then it's put it on the floor, and it's auctioned off.
Mm-hmm.
We have an auction system. And each pile is sold to the highest bidder.
Right.
And we sell 360 piles an hour, which is pretty fast. They know what they're doing, and I think it's the best way to handle tobacco, because you get several people's opinion on it. And another nice thing about it is that we operate about 3 to 4 weeks before Christmas, and in that 3 or 4 weeks, we sell the neighborhood of 400 to 500 million pounds of tobacco in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And farmers have Christmas money,
money
for bills, interest, and who have you, for all necessary.
Sure.
And if there's some talk about maybe having the manufacturers take the tobacco in their doors, would be a long, slow process. They'd be up in April or May, getting it, getting it off the, from the farmer to the companies.
Uh-huh.
But I'm, perhaps I'm being because I'm in the warehouse business.
Sure.
I think it's a way to sell tobacco. It's an orderly fashion.
Now, in those first years when you were in the warehouse, everybody was hand tying, of course.
Yes, all was hand tied.
And how many grades did farmers use?
Oh, basically, then there was five, sometimes six grades.
Uh-huh.
And now it's down to three, and some farmers put it up, and some of them, in one and two. But
mm-hmm.
I've always advocated three basic grades, and
uh-huh.
that's what the government supports it on.
Yeah. Is that including a throwaway grade, too?
Yes, generally those are kind of,
uh-huh.
that made really four, kind
yeah.
of a cast-off.
I see.
And
now, when there weren't price supports, was there a lot more competition between the warehousing because?
Yes, and the worst thing about not having price supports was late in the season,
mm-hmm.
when we called the barrels all being filled up. That last week of sales, it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And the buyers were reluctant, especially if the crop was large, were reluctant to buy it, and it was just,
uh-huh.
it's got very low. It'd
yeah.
be off 10 cents a pound from the
yeah.
high, and when you're talking about 20 and 25 cents a pound back of
that's a
terrible loss. And with this price support, that means that if a man sells late, he gets a decent sale. He may not
sure.
get the top market, but he's within a dollar or two of the price range.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And getting back to
what's
the best thing that's ever happened is the grading and price support. It's done more for our tobacco markets than anything
mm-hmm.
else. And then along come 1950, and there was an article in Reader's Digest called Cancer by the Carton. And it brought out the fact that cigarette smokers were inclined to develop
yeah.
lung cancer and emphysema.
Yeah.
And the companies decided was heavy, burley tobacco that was the prime offender.
Yeah.
So they went in for thinner tobacco plus tobacco from down south.
Mm-hmm.
And this the pool, I've got the figures here, the pool in 4 years had amassed 524 million pounds, which was
Jeez.
Practically a crop.
Oh, yeah.
And then, lo and behold, filter cigarettes made
mm-hmm.
their appearance, about 53 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that to get the taste of tobacco, it was necessary to have some good, strong burley
uh-huh.
and to pull it through that filter.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, burley become real popular, and we had a good market for burley ever since.
So, now, during the war years, what was the market like then? I guess the market was high.
The government was afraid the market would run away, so they established a ceiling. Each
mm-hmm.
grade that was graded bore a ceiling, and the tobacco manufacturers, they were anxious to have it, so the tobacco auctioneers would allocate it.
Mm-hmm.
It was, in those days, three big companies,
mm-hmm.
American, Reynolds, and Lincoln Myers,
mm-hmm.
was a factor, and they got about 90%, and the smaller companies and dealers shared in the other 10.
Okay, now you mentioned those three companies. Were those the same three that were pretty dominant when you started?
Yes, they dominated it for years.
Okay.
Lincoln Myers sort of faded out,
mm-hmm.
and a company called Philip Morris has taken
mm-hmm.
their place, and they're very big.
There's still three?
They're the three major
uh-huh.
ones.
I see. A lot of little companies.
Yeah, there's several small companies. There's Brown and Williamson's is export. They've got English ties.
Uh-huh.
And then there's dealers, Larlard.
Sure.
Larlard participates.
Uh-huh.
And then there's several dealers. We have, at a normal auction, we have seven buyers,
uh-huh.
including the tobacco companies plus the dealers.
Uh-huh.
And,
and do they vary any of those dealer buyers or?
Yes, it's
they might be on the market one
when
year
the market
the
is when the back is scarce, the major buyers will give the dealers some business.
Uh-huh.
they'll have them buy something for them. And, that's the way they get more tobacco. Because they know that the auctioneer would only knock them so much, buy them so much, but they participate in what the dealer gets.
You were talking about now the type of tobacco grown during the 40s.
Yes.
Was it similar to what we have now?
Really? When I was first in the warehouse business, the farmers went in for a very thin type of tobacco. That was the cigarettes were more tobacco type.
And that's what the companies want.
Yeah, that's what they wanted. And the average yield then was around 1,100 pounds per acre. But then during the war with that big demand, the companies would take heavier tobacco. So the University of Kentucky developed some types that would weigh a ton. And for instance, last year, all the tobacco in Kentucky averaged almost 2,400 pounds per acre. But I consider this year, with the dry weather and everything, it would be down considerable.
Sure.
But the whole image of tobacco has changed from a thinner type to a heavier type.
Now, during that tobacco, that first cigarette, I guess, cancer scare, right after that first, the government accumulated a lot of fuel tobacco.
Yes, they did. They had a half, like in 4 years, they had almost about three-fourths or 80% of a crop rate. And it looked like maybe if suddenly this, the filters, and they made a demand for heavy types, they really bailed us out.
Yeah.
And Burley.
They needed the Burley to bring out that flavor through the filter.
Yeah, and I have some figures here that show that over the years, Burley has held its own. In 1950, there was 58% of flu cured in cigarettes, 35%, but it dropped to 35% in 1981. And Burley, in 1950, there was 33% of Burley. And in 1981, it was 31.52, And it has declined very little while
flu cure
is off about 20%. Now, what has made up the difference is foreign tobacco.
Yeah.
The companies are buying foreign tobacco. In 1950, it was... 6 pounds per thousand,
per hundred,
and now it's 31, and there's this bringing in of foreign tobacco
that's really brought it up.
Has really hurt domestic production.
Yeah, it's hurt the flu cure a lot more than our.
Another thing, we found out that in 1950 they used to make. A pound of tobacco made 1,013 cigarettes, and now it makes 1,700 cigarettes. And they have blown it up
somewhere.
They get a lot more.
They get a lot more out of the same tobacco.
But last year, here's some figures on Mason County. Last year, Mason County alone, which has 1,179 tobacco bases. They sold 10,300,000 pounds. And that on that was almost 8,400 pounds per allotment. And at $1.80, this figure is sort of
an estimate.
Each one with a tobacco base received about $14,000.
Sure.
And
so
it's a tremendous factor in our economy.
Yeah, considering
without tobacco we would really be
We have close to 1,200 bases and
only
less than 20,000 people in the county. So
that's a
lot of money coming into the county.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me go back and ask you about the market. Now the heavier tobacco was more popular and that's the way it stayed in the '50s and sixties and seventies.
This type of this heavy Burley that was so usable in filter cigarettes has always been a good thing. Right. In fact, when I first went in the warehouse business, mm-hmm. they liked the bottom of the stalk, which we call the flying, the steam yeah. pack. Mm-hmm. And now anymore, it's at least desirable. They just really don't care for that steam pack. Yeah.
There weren't any big changes for the warehouse when during that. During that those 3 decades, 50s, 60s, the program didn't change that much.
No, there's not been much change except the marketing. They've marketed in bales now in the last couple of years. And
now that's really been a change since the 1980s.
Yeah, 1980s. That speeds up the selling and the unloading, mm-hmm. and there's a little tendency to do what they do down south, put it in sheets. Mm-hmm. But so far, sheets have been too popular.
Now they're going to, there is a support for sheets.
Yes, there is a support price. Mm-hmm. But so many of the companies, everything's so mechanical anymore, mm-hmm. and they have not had they're not geared up for sheets.
I see, right.
And, for instance, one company in 1950 was working 2 shifts, 96 men. Mm-hmm. And now they're doing the same thing in 1 shift with 8 men.
Gee.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. That's how the labor.
Labor, that's right. They just
machines have come in and taken over.
Yeah. Yeah. Mechanized.
Yeah. And, what about the, let me just kind of start and take you through a warehouse season. What do you do before the season actually begins?
Well, we try to keep friendly with our customers and see mm-hmm. to go and visit them and see how their crops are getting along. And generally, they make plans about when they're bringing their tobacco. Mm-hmm. We're officially open around the 10th of November. Mm-hmm. And then we have sales 10 days the following Monday, about the second week after that.
Yeah.
And then we sell 16 days before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then we have a layoff of 2 to 3 weeks.
Now, how is this established?
Let's the company get caught up on their hauling and running.
Now, you talked about cultivating your customers. You're in competition with other warehousemen.
Yes. There's 11 groups in Maysville, 18 warehouses, and they're operated by 11.
Now, that's controlled by, no one could come in and open up a warehouse just if they wanted to. Is that right?
How's there's that? Been some question about it. How expanding, but that is a restraint of trade. We one time there was some rumors of a man opening up near us with limiting to the amount of sales, but mm-hmm. you couldn't hardly do that. This is a free country. If a man wants to open up a warehouse, there's nothing he could do. We have a board of trade, and we have a supervisor, Gene Enger, Dave Clark, Gene is a supervisor, Dave, and they color, and they measure the floors. And you're allotted so many baskets based on your square feet.
I see.
And we worked it out so we have sale daily. Mm-hmm. And that way the farmer gets fast action. Mm-hmm. And I think we do a good job.
Well, that's how you determine how many days you
get
sell.
Away, Warren.
That's how many days, that's how they decide, like you sell 16 days before.
16 days.
It's based on the square footage and so forth.
That's right. Let me correct that. We sell 360 baskets of piles an hour.
Yes, sir.
And we sell 3.5 hours, which is 1,260.
Something like that.
Per buyer. Uh-huh. And that's 3,700. We have 3 sets of buyers. That's 3,700 baskets per day.
Uh-huh.
So we know how much baskets are allowed in each warehouse, so they can determine pretty much several days where the buyers are going to be, and they can plot the movement of the buyers. But
now this board of trade does that.
The board of trade does that. The supervisor.
Where
a good day, we'll sell in Maysville 1.5 million.
That's for all the warehouses.
For all the warehouses participate, 1.5 million.
Yeah.
So in the 16 days, we generally have somewhere around 24 or 25 million. Before Christmas. Last year was the biggest year Maysville ever had. We sold 49 million pounds, and that exceeded any previous years by about 3 million. This figure doesn't show some excess tobacco. About 7 million was excess after the market, after the market was over. So it fell in excess of 50 million.
I see.
And with this dry weather and everything, the market may be down half.
That what was last year?
Last year.
Yeah. I was going back to the customers. How does a farmer, what do you think makes a farmer choose a warehouse?
Well, it's competitive, and it's the way you're treated, and you establish a reputation as being hardworking and some knowledge of tobacco. And I've been in the business so long, and we have a reputation to have a good tobacco. We led the market last year with an average of 186 when the whole market only averaged 183. Mm-hmm. But now I'm not taking all the credit for that. We just have customers have good tobacco.
Uh-huh.
And the buyers know that mm-hmm. we have good tobacco, so they come looking for it. We get it. They're just in the market. We're lucky. We always get it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And some of the bigger warehouses, they have to take all kinds, and some of those all kinds are not too good.
Uh-huh.
We're a little pickish.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't handle quite as many pounds.
No, we don't handle many pounds because we don't have the room. But we go in for
quality
instead of quantity.
Uh-huh. Now, what you said you had to be a hard working and so forth. What do you have to do for the farmer? You unload the tobacco?
Unload it, weigh it.
Mm-hmm.
And each tobacco farmer has a card,
mm-hmm.
and the market, and as soon as it's sold, it's recorded on his card.
Mm-hmm.
And like his base was 11,100 pounds,
mm-hmm.
he's allowed to sell 10% more than that, which would make his gross base about 12,200.
Mm-hmm.
Then when he gets over that, it's red card, and the government takes about $1.30 a pound, so hardly anybody sells the red card. They just take it home with them or something. Sometimes they can lease it from other farmers, and that's
where they
sell it.
Now, you have to keep count of that.
Oh, yes. The Martin card is in our possession,
uh-huh.
in our possession, and we have a warrant writer there from the ASC office,
mm-hmm.
and they watch those cards, and any violation, we soon find it.
Now, that writer for those cards, is there one of those at each warehouse?
Yeah, each warehouse. There's there's the ASC, and there's about six of them, and they go. We can't have a sale without a warrant writer. It's necessary.
Okay.
We can't issue checks until we get their own.
Okay, so you unload it and take track of it and so forth.
Now, sell of option.
Uh-huh.
And,
now, during the actual auction process, how can you help the farmer then?
We make point out to the buyers that it's an excellent crop of tobacco, and tell them that maybe say something about this. It's been selling here for years, and try to help him.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's sort of showmanship,
uh-huh.
but because the buyers are going to buy what they want,
sure.
no matter what you say or do. That's
Now, a lot of farmers you deal with, some of them probably have leased the tobacco and so forth.
Yes.
Will you even, I think warehousemen probably even make adjustments as far as payment, don't they?
Well, sometimes a farmer will process, he'll need the money to buy a lease,
mm-hmm.
and but that's all handled at the local ASC office. We sometimes will advance the money
mm-hmm.
to buy the lease, and then of course we take it out of his check.
Sure. You don't make payments directly to the banks. What's your relationship now? The auctioneers, where do they come from?
They're 90% from the southern market. It
mm-hmm.
seems to be that they have control.
Now,
I don't
who are they employed by?
The warehouse.
They are
warehouse. We pay them $1.10, I think it is. 1,000 pounds. Last year they there was three auctioneers and they made about six.
This is side two of a tape with Francis Comer. we were talking about the auctioneers and how you pay them. Now, what is the relationship of, say, the warehouseman to the auctioneer? Can you try to affect your, help your customer by talking to the auctioneer? Or?
The auctioneer works primarily for the warehouse. It's a, we, if the auctioneer doesn't cooperate, we get a new auctioneer. He when the back is scarce, he has to allocate it, and it, he's got to take care of everybody without getting them mad, and it's it calls for a little
diplomacy
there.
Now, when you're talking about allocating it, you're talking about going to the different dealers.
To the companies. You go to the big companies first, and then you have to let the dealers have a pile down. And got to keep everybody happy.
Well, now, how does he know how to do that?
Well, that's experience? His training. Experience. He gets it from down south, and he divides them up pretty well. Of course, they'll fuss at him some, but on the whole, all our auctioneers have been very satisfactory. We had no trouble with it.
Now, what about the buyers? What's the relationship of the warehouseman to the buyers?
Well, we try to keep goodwill and keep them happy. And,
You do that by trying to give them the kind of tobacco they want?
Yeah, and sometimes they get a pile of tobacco they don't want, and we'll take it off their hands rather than embarrass them.
Yeah.
And we favor each other. They favor us, and we do things for them.
Now, when you just mentioned that, they might have bought a pile they didn't want. Is that because
they
found out the company didn't want it?
Well, they just an error in judgment. You're selling six a minute, and you can occasionally you'll get one that you really shouldn't have had. So, generally we say, well, we'll take it. And that, especially if they're young, inexperienced, they appreciate those things.
Yeah, does that happen pretty frequently?
Not too often. A couple of times a sale.
Buyers are pretty pretty proficient at what they're doing.
Yes, they are. They learn fast. And, but in my 45 years, when I first started as a sales manager, the buyers not only would buy tobacco, but they would see that their competitors paid as much as they did. See what I mean? They didn't want him to purchase in tobacco cheaper than they. So you've always had some steady bid, and that was for price support. But price support is knocked that out. Generally, they only give a dollar or two above the price support. And sometimes they divide you up a little. One will take one, and another company will take another. But before price support, it was more of a free and open market.
Yeah, and the auctioneer really had to have a little more skill.
He, a good, smart auctioneer, knew the high and low of every company's grade. And he was, it was his advantage and the warehouse advantage to get the high money on each grade. And
I like back there when you're talking about how the farmers actually ran out the buyers one time. I guess the price is pretty well established at the first sale or so.
Yes, there's a lot of it's like the playing poker. It's the first deal around. You kind of feel each other out to see where the strength is. The first day or two, they're establishing the price, and by the middle of the week, like it starts on Monday, they pretty much know what they're doing. It generally goes up a dollar or two from the first day.
Yeah. And you were telling me about the season. Let me just, you said the season, usually you all officially open on November the 10th. When do you start taking
Well, that's when we receive tobacco.
Oh, I see.
We generally open the Monday 2 weeks. It's generally the Monday of Thanksgiving. That week.
Right. But you don't take tobacco before like the 10th of November?
No. The reason we don't, tobacco drifts so. And we have arranged with the companies in tobacco received before the official weigh date is weighed over.
I see. And then you have that 16-day sale before Christmas.
That's right.
And then when's the after Christmas break?
It's generally the Monday after Thanksgiving.
Or New Year's, you mean?
New Year's, New Year's, Monday after.
And how many days it runs until you?
It runs until the tobacco completely. Generally, it's about 2 weeks of pretty heavy marketing tobacco after New Year's, and then it begins to lessen, and we take off. We have three sets of buyers, and then one following week we'll take off a set, and then the following week we'll be down to just one set. Uh-huh. One set finishes up the market.
I see. Now, like, the Lexington market stays open
yes,
longer.
Yes, they do.
That's just because there's more tobacco
yeah,
coming
that's
in there.
It gets, well, we find it a question of economics. Uh-huh. We can't stay open for what little tobacco is left in this area, so we close. Mm-hmm. And some of the late farmers, why, Lexington gets them all over the state, and mm-hmm. it makes a pretty good market for them because they're drawn from the whole state.
The area. You mentioned the economics of it. The reason that you can is because you're paying the auctioneer.
The auctioneer is much, but you have some uh-huh. help that you...
Yeah, you have to watch.
Yeah. You've got regular hands and mm-hmm. everything.
Now, your warehouse is, like you said, it's not one of the bigger ones, but what kind of employees do you have to have during the season?
Well, we have these people that we used to have tobacco graders that would mm-hmm. sort the load when it was hand tied, but anymore we don't need them so much. We need good strong boys to get it off the truck and put it on the pallets and baskets and tie it.
Uh-huh.
And we've sacrificed mm-hmm. knowledge for muscles
yeah.
a little.
Yeah.
And this bale tobacco is all right, but I really think that the buyers don't have as good a look at a pile of bales as they did a basket of hand-tied. But see, I'm old-fashioned. I'm not.
Yeah, the market's just about totally gone to bales now.
Oh, yes. Last year it was well over 80%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about some of the special cases now? I know there's some companies, I think, sometimes that want a special type of tobacco. And
we had a nice order last year from the Germans. They wanted some hand-dyed tobacco, and we found Kelch boys down in Edge of Bracken Mason. They had about 21,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we got them $1.94 average for that tobacco, but they'd taken a world of pains with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a German order, and mm-hmm. purchased by the Park Tobacco Company.
Yeah,
and they stipulated it'd be hand-tied.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
But that's they don't buy too much of it.
Yeah, what
possibly
about the
4 or 5 million pounds in uh-huh. this area?
Yeah,
that's several markets.
Uh-huh. What about the? Can farmers really tell a difference if they take pains with their tobacco? Or?
Well, they tell me that they can't. This baling goes up so fast that
mm-hmm.
they can't afford to hand-tie it anymore.
Yeah. Well, I meant as far as the quality of the leaf, even in the bales.
Well, they're supposed to keep it all one kind, and mm-hmm. they do a good job of it.
Uh-huh.
I find that 95% to 96% of the farmers are honest. There's always mm-hmm. a few rogues in their business, but most of them, they want to give value for value.
Mm-hmm.
They want to put it up so they get the high dollar, and they feel like that they should put it up so the man buying them would get it full value.
Mm-hmm. From the years that you've been out on the market, have you seen what about the quality of tobacco? Do you think it's
definitely the farmers don't take the pride in it that they did when I mm-hmm. first started. They used to take so much time and starting and grading it and tying it up,
uh-huh.
and it's just got to be sort of a commodity,
uh-huh.
Something that, and the companies sort of fostered that too, but some years they'll pay a good price for about anything and everything.
Sure.
And then other years when the crop's big, they get a little pickish.
Uh-huh.
And definitely the pride mm-hmm. in the workmanship is declining.
Does that have to do with the fact that maybe there's not as many people raising bigger crops?
That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. And the small man has been taken over by the bigger. It's
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of big allotments in Mason County, and they have to handle it fast.
Yeah.
And one thing about tobacco, it's you can't ride on a tractor seat. It's just a lot of hard hand labor. It's sweat and toil.
That's
and
right.
It don't lend itself to being mechanized like lots of corn mm-hmm. and soybeans and things.
Mm-hmm.
But it pays off. It's last year at 2,400 pounds,
mm-hmm.
It grossed $3,600 or $700 per acre. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing else that can touch that.
Not in this area.
No.
What about the here. What about the warehouse business? You said that one of the fellows that was in with you originally was one of the people that started the warehouse.
In 1908, they started the... previous to that, the farmers would... they had kind of stations where you would take your tobacco and put it in a barrel, a hogshead.
Yeah.
And then you would haul that to Maysville, and sometimes you would sell it to a speculator dealer. Then it was loaded on a boat and taken to Cincinnati, and they had a hogshead market there.
Oh,
also
see.
In Louisville.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of tobacco went by river.
Mm-hmm.
But that was slow. Mm-hmm. Farmers slow getting money in this. This loose leaf system that established in 1980, it took on, and it's been here now. But
now, I was told that...
75 years.
Sure, yeah. I was told that one time, you know, there might have been dealers that actually left the farm.
That's right. They bought it in the barns.
Uh-huh.
And they sometimes they made money, and sometimes they lost money. And it was a gamble. They would look at the tobacco that was for it was stripped. They would just look at
hanging in
the barn.
Now, this wasn't in our time period, though.
Not in my time. That was a little before my time. That was more in the hogshead days they would buy it. And going a good price for tobacco those days was about 10 cents a pound. If you back there, if you got... Of course, World War One jumped it up to about $1 a pound, and then... after World War One, it went back to about 15 cents.
That's right.
And
I didn't really get into too much detail on cost, and I know, you know, that varies from year to year, but about what does it cost a farmer to sell his tobacco?
It varies a little according to warehouse. We're about as cheap as any of it.
Uh-huh.
We don't charge for weighing it, and we get 5.25% of the gross.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's baled, we rebate the farmer $3. We roughly get about $6, $6 per hundred for settlement.
Yeah.
And
now how has that varied over the years?
It's much higher. It's much higher.
Oh.
The first year I was in the warehouse business, we got 75 cents a hundred.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get about $9, of course, give it back some, but it's gone up approximately 10 times. But on the other hand, tobacco has advanced 10 times.
Sure, right.
I was 18 cents, and now it's $1.80. So the warehouse charges and the price of tobacco are pretty much
consistent.
They're in order.
Uh-huh, I see. How does this no net cost thing now that went into effect last year, where is that taken out of the farmers?
Yeah, well, they took off $1 to process tobacco, and then they took another 55 cents off for the graders. The farmers paid for the grading, and there's always something being taken out of a man's check. This year they're down south, and it's being rumored that they might take out 7 cents a pound here, and that is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
But we have a bright spot. In this dry weather, my friends that has this tobacco in storage tell me that the pool has sold about 55% of last year's crop. And that's excellent, and maybe before the market opens, they'll sell another 20-30%. So being they won't have much tobacco on hand, we're hoping that they'll not take out that maybe back to $1. I mean, we can stand $1, but we certainly don't want no 7 cents.
What stage does the farmer pay that when he...
That's taken out of his check.
Uh-huh.
That's on his sheet.
Now, do you have to handle that?
Oh, yes. We send that in. We got to count for that every penny of it.
I see. So you have to
do a lot of bookkeeping.
That's one of the big...
You never get paid for it. I mean, there's no compensation for it. That's one of the expenses of the business.
As when the tobacco sells, you have to give the farmer a check, and you take out your fee, and then the government's fee.
Yeah.
That about takes care of those three.
Right. Uh-huh. And they charge for grading, which is 55 cents.
Right. That was one group of people I didn't ask you about and what your relationship is with them. What about the graders?
Well, I've the grading system in Maysville is excellent. We've had over the period of years, they've come and gone, and they have all been efficient and helpful to the farmers. I have nothing but praise for government grading. I've seen maybe some better than others, but all of them were sincere and tried. They were painstaking, and some of them were just occasionally a little more knowledgeable, but they were honest and trustworthy.
If you see a farmer's tobacco that you think has not been graded correctly, is there anything you can do with that?
Oh, yes, we can. Some of the head grader and review it. And sometimes it doesn't sell well. We've been pretty lucky rejecting it and taking a chance on maybe getting higher sale the next day.
Now, tell me about that process. That's something that a lot of farmers do. And what are the limits to that?
Well, you reject it and... And you try to get it on as quick as you can. And used to reweigh it, but pretty much it's put back and save weights.
So when you reject it, you just don't accept whatever they
bid
for it,
and
then you try to sell it the next day or later.
Put new tickets on it. Put new tickets on showing the previous pounds. And then it's presented to the buyers for the second time.
Now, the actual day of the auction, does the warehouseman walk down the line with the buyers?
Yes, the sales manager goes along next to the auctioneer, and he asks for a certain price, only a dollar or two above the support price. Now, when I first started in the business, we had no support price, so the auctioneer depended on the sales manager to give him a starting bid. And I was the youngest starter around, the sales manager around here, and once in a while I couldn't come up with a bid, and it was an auctioneer, a little fellow from down south, and he'd look at me and say, "Have a chair." I couldn't come up with that. Go sit down. have a chair. So when he said, "Have a chair," I had to come out with something.
Come up with something.
I'd come out with something. Have a chair.
Now, do warehousemen ever buy tobacco?
Yes, occasionally. Somewhere else, our warehouse is small. We try to sell it to the farmers, but some of them actively engage, and that's got its pros and cons. And sometimes the buyers resent that you bid against
you
them.
You bid against them. Right?
That's right. And I find out that we're commission merchants. We're out there to sell it. The farmer don't like the way it sells, we try it again, but we don't buy.
Right.
Yes.
You really, considering all the people that you have to deal with, you really kind of got to be a politician and
yes, you do.
PR person.
Yes, you do. You have to be friendly. And it's no place for a grouch.
Now, on the, for example, the number of the number of pounds that have sold over the years, say between 1938 and 1980, has reduction actually increased, or has it remained pretty constant?
Well, what's happened that the farmers get so much more? The per acre, they have doubled the weight. And in 1934, when Roosevelt established tobacco quotas, everybody had to turn in a history of their farm the previous 3 years. And the highest precinct was Mays Lick, which is supposed to have the best land, and it run about 1,000 pounds. But there was areas in the county where the tobacco was only 700 or 800 pounds per acre. But commercial fertilizer and knowledge and tobacco seed, I'd say Mason County averaged 2,400 or 2,500 pounds per acre last year. But that's just... everything. Well, we used to get 30 bushel of corn to the acre. Now we get 150, and everything is
done the same.
Production has moved up.
Right. So you've seen more pounds actually handled.
Oh yes.
Of course, now with the poundage system, it's going to remain.
It's pretty constant. They pretty much know what they got. They can estimate.
When you go through the warehouse now, and there's tobacco on the floor. Is it physically different than it was, over the last two or three decades as the...
Well, I thought tobacco in the hand tied was displayed better and it looked nicer.
Yeah.
The bales, you can tell good bales from bad, but sure. It's not as noticeable as the quality there.
Well, what about the actual, are the leaves bigger and heavier?
Oh, yes, definitely there. Uh-huh. The leaves of, I'd say a leaf of tobacco is a third larger than it was when I first mm-hmm. started into this.
And they're raising heavier tobacco.
Yeah, heavier tobacco. Uh-huh. And we have something called MH30 that mm-hmm. tends to increase the weight and keeps the suckers from growing. All mm-hmm. those have been very helpful to sure.
Try. What about the companies and the dealers, the buyers? Are they looking for something different than they did 5 years ago, 10 years
ago? Back when I first started, the buyers were pretty much on their own. They were out there to, mm-hmm. to buy tobacco, and like I said, to see that their competition didn't buy it cheaper than they did. But anymore, I find the buyers are dominated by the supervisors. They're ridden pretty hard. They're supervised once or twice a day, and uh-huh. and they're under a tight rein. They're told what to do, and they're expected to do it. They uh-huh. they don't have as much freedom mm-hmm. to operate as they did 45 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What about the warehouses in the future?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll tell you about tobacco. Uh-huh. We're persecuted. We're an endangered uh-huh. species. I mean, everybody fusses at it. But I'll say this, there's 100 million automobiles on the road pumping this old diesel black smoke in the air. And there's been, I've read this, and then there's a smog in L.A. 4 hours out on the streets in L.A. is the same as smoking 2 packs of cigarettes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You heard that?
Yeah, similar kinds of things, right.
And I don't think tobacco, they explain for everything, but mm-hmm. I think if we had horse and buggies, you wouldn't hear very much on
that's about probably true.
Yeah.
What about there have been a lot of critics of different aspects of the tobacco program about, you know, the supports.
Yeah.
Have the warehousemen been picked upon in any?
Well,
they haven't been singled out very much.
No, the farmers they bring it to us, and they, mm-hmm. they kind of think that it's all gravy, but we make just a reasonable profit.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to build a warehouse now, mm-hmm. and it's a cost. Fortune in Maysville, 90% of the warehouses have been here.
Sure.
30, 40 years, they're built in cheaper times. It's, mm-hmm. it's the business.
So that investment's not as,
yeah,
as big
right.
as...
That's right.
But you think most farmers are pretty well satisfied with...
That's right. They uh-huh. We used, when I first went in the business, they would allow them to take care of the back of the Lexan, and they seemed to get more money for it. But price support, and you can do as well in Maysville as anywhere. Are you... You can't afford to go haul your tobacco 50, 60 miles
for a
cent or so and uh-huh. make 2 or 3 trips. You're better off at home.
When you look at the list of markets and you see the different averages
that
they all brought, and sometimes you can see a 4 or 5 cent difference. Does that mostly relate back to the quality of the leaf?
Yeah, that's the quality in that area. Sometimes mm-hmm. the tobacco isn't quite as good.
Mm-hmm.
Some markets just have last year, and they tell me they got a bad crop last year. The best tobacco in this area is at Cynthiana.
Uh-huh.
But they've had unusual dry weather, and they said they got a bad one this year, but last year they had a good one.
Yeah.
But
we,
Maysville, knocks along at a pretty good price. We sell right along with Lexan anymore.
Sure.
Well, you
the fact that
it's volume, we have a right smart volume.
And yeah, it's such a big
when you
market.
Get a volume, you don't
start the average out a little
right.
bit.
It, uh-huh. it gets some inferior
tobacco. Do you have much business across the river or very far
some,
out?
Some, uh-huh. Principally, we sell Mason and Bracken County. We've always
right
had
right?
good contacts in Bracken.
Uh-huh.
And other warehouses sell. You hire kind of trade men.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have more
contacts.
Ripley has their strong competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they do a pretty good job.
Yeah. You mentioned that your warehouse gets a lot of Brighton County tobacco.
That's right.
Are there some other ones that, say, attract more business from Flemingham?
Yeah.
Or,
well, or, we have some Brighton County people work for us.
Uh-huh. There's no major changes foreseen in the warehouse and trade in the next few years. Y'all, there's nothing much you can do mechanically or
no
as far as setting up differently.
No, mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Yeah,
we've gone to bales now, and
mm-hmm.
the tobacco companies have taken their machinery. They've geared it to handle
for
bales.
Uh-huh.
And it's very.
You think that'll be the dominant form for a while?
The dominant form, yes.
Uh-huh. Well,
and in my experience, government support price and filter cigarettes have been mm-hmm. the greatest help.
The biggest changes, uh-huh.
And the best yeah. help for Burley Tobacco.
What do you think might happen? Of course, the warehousemen will just have to adapt, I'm sure. But what might happen if the government support would leave or?
Chaos.
Okay. Yeah.
I would hate it because there would be a time that you would get a pretty decent price, but mm-hmm. it would go back to the time before we had the government support.
Yeah.
The poor fellow that would sell when the barrels were filled, he'd get a remnant.
Oh, okay. It's like the early
yeah,
years you
yeah,
showed
the
us.
The early years.
Went
yeah.
down 18 to 13,
yeah,
back
yeah.
up to 28.
Yeah, that's right. It's
just no prediction.
That's right.
I appreciate you talking to me.
Well, I hope we